I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will take a look at how some Ghanaians are addressing public health in their country. After the break, we will see some of the health benefits of fasting and how to stay healthy when fasting. We start with an activist in Ghana who is swimming the nearly 500-kilometer-long Volta River, including Lake Volta, to bring attention to worsening water pollution. Yvette Tete, who will swim several hours per day for over a month, is also collecting water samples along the way to test for pollution. Shana Nutord reports from Lake Volta in Ghana.
Ghana's Lake Volta is the world's largest man-made lake by surface area. And activist Yvette Tete is swimming its entire length as part of her swim across the Volta River's almost 500 kilometers. In less than a month, Tete swam 300 kilometers, up to 14 per day, to raise awareness on Ghana's worsening water pollution.
There's no action that people take unless they care. And so what we're doing with the swim is just basically bringing people into the experience of what it feels like, what it is to be in this absolutely incredible part of Ghana, and to show them it is worth it to bring our attention to the space to make sure that we are preserving the beauty.
Tete is accompanied by researchers from the All Foundation, which is supporting her swim and advocates against textile waste. They are collecting water and air samples along the way to study what is driving water pollution. Ghana imports about 50 million pieces of secondhand clothes each week, but the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change says about 40% of it ends up in landfills and then in water.
The number of clothing tentacles at the beachfronts and water bodies has increased over time. Now, microfibers and chemicals from these clothings, these items of clothing that are overrun across the beaches, leach into the water and end up polluting the water for the communities that live in and around the water bodies.
The United Nations says 76% of Ghanaian households are at the risk of drinking contaminated water. Ecological researcher Josiah Ayesu is leading the All Foundation's team. He says the team hopes its research will cause clothing manufacturers to be held accountable for waste products shipped to Ghana. And this will be done through a system known as the Extended Producer Responsibility, or EPR.
The main aim of the OR is to push EPR policy to the global north, that's Europe and America, for the harm being done to us by manufacturing clothes and pushing it down the line for us to face the consequences. And so the data that we get will be, it's an evidence.
Tete says by completing the swim, she hopes to inspire others to protect the environment one stroke at a time. Sana Nutod for VOA News, Lake Volta, Ghana.
Improving the health and care of Ghana's population is a mission the Physicians and Surgeons Foundation of North America aims to achieve. Among other things, the U.S.-based nonprofit organization engages in advocacy, education, and programmatic events intended to impact Ghanaians in Ghana as well as in the North America diaspora. For more insight, I spoke with Dr. Berta Serwa Aye, president of the Ghana Physicians and Surgeons Foundation of North America. Take a listen.
Dr. Berta Serwa Aye, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Ms. Leonard.
You are the president of the Ghana Physicians and Surgeons Foundation of North America. This is an organization that, among other things, strive to improve the health and the care of Ghana's population. It's part of its mission. So talk to us about the mission of the organization. In a nutshell, what does the organization do and how long has it been established?
Thank you for having me on your program. So yeah, the Ghana Physicians and Surgeons Foundation, shorts also known as GPSF, was formed 20 years ago. And the main mission of the organization is to support postgraduate medical education in Ghana and improve the health of Ghanaians in the diaspora and around the world. And here's what's happening. So once you finish medical school, that is not the end of your education. You have to branch off into internal medicine, surgery, and all these subspecialties. And up until 2002, Ghana did not have its own postgraduate program. And so people who had graduated as doctors were either having to go to outside, somewhere outside of the country like myself, or join what we call the West African College of Physicians. And so in 2002, the president at the time, John Ajikum Kufuor, decided that, you know, it's time to have our own postgraduate training program. Then the question became, where are we going to find faculty and the support to get this off the ground? And so that is why the organization was formed, with one primary purpose of providing faculty and financial support to lift this heavy thing off the ground. And we haven't ceased in that mission, which is to support postgraduate medical education in Ghana.
So how do you do that in a more concrete way? How do you support graduating students to continue?
Very good. So we're 20 years old. I mean, everything begins small. You have to have vision, even for your own personal life. You have to see far, and then you strive to work towards that. So the Ghana College of Physicians and Surgeons has been formed. How do we provide faculty? So that has been done through many ways. The first one was that we decided that together with the Ghana College of Physicians and Surgeons, we're going to start something called the Medical Fiesta. This is like a five-day continuing medical education program that doctors from the U.S., either who are Ghanaian or any doctor for that matter, is able to be faculty to give lectures during this five-day continuing medical education program. And the first one was held, I believe, in 2009, and over 250 doctors attended. So during that short period, it gives the postgraduate doctors an opportunity to learn some medical things going on outside the country and also to learn from their compatriots. So that's the first one. The next thing that we did as an organization was to support the college with journals and a website called UpToDate. So in other words, we helped them stock their library so that the students who had graduated, I mean, the postgraduate students would be able to access medical literature. And then after that, let me take an example. This year, we worked with Books for Africa and we donated over 14 electronic readers to some of the people who had graduated. And I visited, Ghana has 7 medical schools. I visited 5 of those medical schools personally to meet with the students and to donate these tablets to them. During the COVID pandemic, we also had these Zoom meetings, which was attended by over 800 people, teaching people about COVID-19 and all that goes on. And every year, we have this annual conference where the rector of the college in Ghana meets with us to give us an update of how the college is doing. And then we also share how we're doing. And then the most exciting thing happened last year. So besides teaching, how do you get doctors from here to actually go and work in Ghana and then teach residents face to face? A lot of them don't have licenses in Ghana. And so last year we signed something called the Memorandum of Understanding between the Ghana Medical and Dental Council that provides a rapid route for doctors who live in the U.S. to get their license in Ghana. And it has been such an exciting development that a lot of the doctors have signed up to be members just so they can take care of, you know, they can take advantage of this facility.
This is very interesting, you know, because one of the things that we hear a lot about is the fact that a lot of the brains, right, the brain, African brain, when it comes to medicine, is outside of Africa, this phenomenon of brain drain. So how is this collaboration encouraging these newly graduate to remain in the country? How do you empower them to be a solution locally and not follow in your footsteps, even though you are bringing back there? So your role is also needed.
Right. So you hit the nail on the head. That's the right word you use. We are actually reversing the brain drain, literally. we're actually giving back. And, you know, not everybody in the diaspora is actually taking away. And I'm not digressing, but I think of somebody like Kwame Nkrumah, who singularly is responsible for almost all the independence of sub-Saharan Africa, allowing Ghana to be the first country to gain independence and individually influencing all the countries to gain independence. It's true that at that time, he must have been maybe 0.1% of the Africans in the diaspora, but he alone made a huge difference. So we as an organization, it's true that there's brain drain, but we are seeking to reverse the brain drain. In fact, our members are so excited about being able to obtain a license to practice back home. And besides the ability to practice back home, we are engaging the medical students. Like I told you before, we had lectures. I had two Zoom meetings with the medical students in Ghana in December and February, and over 500 of them attended. And what did we tell them? Look, the grass is not so much green here like you think. It's a lot of hustle. It's a lot of please stay home and develop yourself. And we gave examples about the fact that our colleagues who stayed home, they work at the World Health Organization, they are this, they, like they've actually fulfilled their full potential instead of coming to America and coming to sort of like a plateau in your career. So we're actually reversing the brain drain. That's the whole idea of this organization.
Another part of your mission is to, of course, address healthcare in Ghana. Talk to us about how much of that is part of what you do every day as an organization and the sort of impact that you have been able to make so far.
All right. So in regards to that, one of the things we do is to donate medical equipment back home. This organization has some kind of understanding with the Ministry of Health. People have a lot of financial difficulty importing healthcare equipment. If GPSF goes through the Ministry of Health, a lot of the customs and things, the roadblocks that people have with shipping medical equipment back home is waived. We've been able to help during the COVID-19, we donated medical equipment to some of the hospitals and personal protective equipment. Also, a lot of the big hospitals in Ghana actually look to us. We're in the process of, where I don't want to disclose too much, but one of the big modern facilities in Ghana, we're working an arrangement with them so that physicians can go and actually work back there. And so we have formed a for-profit private corporation out of some of our members. We don't want to do that as a nonprofit, but we've asked some of our members, we've actually registered a company in Ghana so that people can actually go and provide services back home. And then by virtue of some of the educational things we do, we're gradually changing people's mentality and changing how people practice. Not to mention the fact that this year we've broken out into what we call subspecialties. So we have radiology doctors, obstetricians, neurosurgeons, all within our organization, and they are actually giving lectures every single week to the students back home. So if you're educating people who are providing healthcare, then in a way you are also influencing the way healthcare is delivered. So the radiologists have sessions with the radiology residents every week. There's a group that provides lectures to the people who are in training doing critical care in the ICU. They do that every week. And so we're making a huge difference back home.
That's fantastic. Now let's talk about another aspect of the program that the organization has is the annual gatherings, right? You mentioned, you already mentioned something in this regard. You have an event coming up, your annual conference, I believe, coming up this week. Talk to us about the significance of this event as part of your program every year, and what is to be expected this year?
All right, thank you. So every year, we meet to get an update on just how much, what did we do during the year? Are we moving the dial in terms of the things we want to do? And remember, I told you that this group has been formed to help with postgraduate education. So the rector, sort of the leader of postgraduate medical education in Ghana, has to be at this meeting every year to give us a report. How is the college doing? What can we do to help? And so last year, he proposed that our members should have a place, a position in the postgraduate college. And so this past year, we've been working on how we can make that happen. It's also an opportunity to network and to recruit more people to join us. So potentially Ghanaian physicians in the US, including the residents in training, are about 4,000. We don't have all that 4,000 as our membership. They are potential members. So the conference gives us an opportunity to network, to talk about what we're doing, and let people know that we exist. Besides that, it allows us to mentor the younger students who are in this country or who are in training, who want to know where to find their feet. Another one that I can personally attest to is that the conference allows us to interact directly with the healthcare leadership in Ghana. So during the conference, all the who is who of healthcare in Ghana shows up. If I was in Ghana, I would never be able to meet the Minister of Health. I may never be able to talk to the President of the Ghana Medical Association, but guess what? They're all on a flight coming here. The Minister of Health was not able to make it, but the Director of the Ghana College of Physicians, the Director of the Registrar of the Medical and Dental Council, the one who gives licenses, is on his way here. All the who is who of medicine in Ghana shows up at this conference, and we get to have a dialogue with them. So it is a very, very special time. And I think for our 20th anniversary, it is extra special because we're going to be recognizing everybody who's been a president before. We've had about 18 presidents. We're going to recognize them. And for me, as a sitting president, what I found interesting as I read through all the speeches over the years was that somebody promises something, they start working on it, the next president builds on it, and then the next president just says, hey, it's done. And so we've been building one block at a time, and the organization is just getting more and more interesting, powerful, and influential.
That's great. And before we wrap, Dr. Sarah Ayi, what is your final message?
My final message to listeners and to doctors who are Ghanaians in the U.S., is that we are on the move to change healthcare in Africa. I want people to join us. I want them to financially support us. Our website is ghanaphysicians.org. They would find a lot more information about us. We're an impactful organization, and we're forced to reckon it with, and we look forward to further engagement with everyone.
Dr. Bertha Sarwa Ayi, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Ms. Minu.
That was Dr. Bertha Sarwa Ayi, president of the Ghana Physicians and Surgeons Foundation of North America. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. Fasting has ended for Christians with the Easter holiday. Meanwhile, Muslims worldwide will soon conclude the holy month of Ramadan, abstaining from eating, drinking, and smoking from dawn to dusk. According to research published by the U.S. National Institute of Health, some types of fasting may have positive effects on health, like controlling hypertension, inflammation, and blood sugar. But fasting can also have some negative effect, including unwanted weight loss. Let's go to Ethiopia, where the majority of the population is Eastern Orthodox and Muslim. Kennedy Abate will show us how people practice fasting and what health benefits they are getting.
The family of Abdulkadir Abdu, who lives in the Figa neighborhood in Addis Ababa, has gathered around a meal after an all-day fasting. Abdu says they opt for fruits and vegetables instead of heavy meals during iftar.
Thanks be to Allah, since we have been fasting all day, eating things like fruits will be easier for the stomach to digest. After that, we will have a prayer. Eating the next meal is not advisable until after the prayers.
Social interactions are more frequent during fasting. Neighbors visit each other more during the fasting season. During our visit to Abdu's family, we see that neighbors and other guests join the iftar. One of them is Mr. Teke Girmay, who is an Orthodox Christian who has been fasting all day long. Orthodox Christians abstain from food until at least 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and when they do eat, they won't be consuming dairy and meat throughout the fasting season. Girmay, who says his health condition is showing improvement during the fasting season, is now contemplating to stay away from meat altogether.
By the way, when I was young and hadn't started fasting, I used to think that I couldn't live without meat. However, after I began fasting, my health has shown improvements. Now I find it difficult to eat meat after the fasting season is over. There are several elements that arise from eating meat. I think God came up with fasting so we can be healthy.
The other guest who attended the iftar at Abdul's home is Abdurrahman Muhammad, who says the health benefits of fasting has been described in the religious books.
Science has backed the fact that fasting has health benefits. People with big bellies like me are advised to do something about it. Religious documents say fasting has many health benefits.
Internal medicine specialist Dr. Blaine Amsalu says fasting has physical and psychological benefits.
Fasting has great many health benefits. Overweight people will lose their extra pounds. The chance of having stomach ailments is less. Fasting keeps us away from alcohol. It will also bring variety in what we eat, and there will be less meat and dairy products. We tend to eat a balanced diet during fasting, and this has physical and mental benefits. It helps us adapt a better lifestyle.
Dr. Amsalu advises that even after the end of the fasting season, people should be careful what they consume so they won't risk their health. She says their eating habits should be in such a way that is beneficial for their health.
As millions of Muslims around the world continue to celebrate the holy month of Ramadan with fasting, doctors are urging people on medication to take medical advice first.
Doctors and clinical pharmacists at the British Midlands practice in Walsall are advising patients who are fasting on how to change the dosage of their drugs or alter the times they take them if they have chronic and acute illnesses. Saeed Uden, a patient at the practice, says he and his wife have diabetes, but they are learning how to manage while still observing Ramadan.
First of all, I am having the medication early in the morning and the nighttime, evening. So we change it to the evening time after sunset and before sunrise at the night time. So this doesn't affect my diabetes. And we are having plenty of fluid like water and plenty of salads.
Muslim doctors in the United Kingdom from the British Islamic Medical Association have collected clinical evidence-based studies to inform patients and other doctors about how to manage medication. It is called the Ramadan Compendium. It gives a breakdown of how to manage numerous health problems from heart and respiratory disease to chronic kidney and blood diseases. The British Medical Journal has published advice on how doctors can help patients during Ramadan. The article urges medical professionals to focus on prescribed medications and timings of doses while reconsidering drugs that can cause dehydration or low blood sugar levels. Imam Muhammad Saeed at the Aisha Mosque says the clergy helps to prepare the congregation weeks in advance. They also bring in health professionals to advise them.
With the collaboration of BIMA and other medical organizations, we do have sessions. We do have actually these kind of like sittings where we call the people, come and come with your questions and ask.
The general practitioners and mosques have clinical pharmacists who can consult with patients and prescribe changes in drugs and dosages.
So we have a lot of patients on anti-diabetic medication. Some of this medication is taken three times a day, four times a day. So when patients are fasting, there are times where they can't take this medication, otherwise they will break their fast. So what our job as clinical pharmacist is to rationalize their medication and their regime and see what we can do to actually change the medication to see if they can give a long-acting preparation rather than one that takes three or four times a day.
Doctors say if patients have any worries, they should try out small periods of fasting and seek different medications well before Ramadan begins. That way, they can enter the holy month with the confidence that they can keep their faith and their good health.
Zaitoun Mahmoud Aminu is a dietitian with Kano State School of Health Technology. He tells us more about the health benefits of fasting and how to stay healthy while fasting.
So when we look at the health benefits, at how some researchers have explained that fasting helps in making someone to lose weight, being that an individual is going to cut or reduce its own intake of calories. In addition to that, fasting helps in stabilizing the blood sugar level. So the blood sugar level is being stabilized during fasting as a result of reducing the insulin sensitivity that is caused by the fat that is present in the blood. In addition to that, fasting boosts brain function. When we are breaking our fast, we should take fresh dates. If we are not able to get fresh dates, we should take dry one. If we are not able to get that, we can take water. So when you look at these things that our religion taught us, you will understand that the main aim of that is to replenish back the glucose and the water that we have lost during the fasting period. So it is very important for someone that is breaking his fast to take something that will bring back his own glucose level and also bring back the water that he has lost during the fasting period. For example, we can take fruits or vegetables that are rich, that are containing much amount of water. Let's take, for example, watermelon. Watermelon is a very good fruit that has much water in it and also has glucose level that can enhance or can replenish back the glucose in our blood. If you want fast and you know that you have some medical conditions, you have to seek for medical advice. You have to look, go and ask your consultant and know whether it is allowed for you to fast or not. Because some people, for example, if someone has ulcer, if you have ulcer or you have diabetes, it is very dangerous for someone to fast without medical advice. So it is always recommended that if you want to fast and you know that you have some medical conditions, you have to go and seek advice from a physician. That is very important. Now, we know that during fasting, it is a period that somebody will experience fast and hunger. So when somebody is fasting and the level of dehydration is high, or the hunger is making somebody to become unconscious, it means that there is need for that individual to stop fasting, because not stopping fasting could lead to death. When somebody's blood sugar level is down, the condition we call hypoglycemia is a very dangerous condition that can lead to death. So it is always very important for somebody to remain alert.
That was Zaitoun Mahmoud Aminu, dietitian with Kano State School of Health Technology.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mukbilia Barrow. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.